All right, welcome to the Young Turks. Huge day ahead for you guys. Roger Ailes has passed away. I'm going to tell you all about that in a second. Alex Jones, he said if there's one thing he's going to do, he's going to fight this Chobani lawsuit all the way. He's never going to give up. So what did he do today? Oh, wait for the second hour. You're going to love it. Apparently, Alex Jones loves to get his ass kicked by Turkish Americans. So we will show that to you later in the program. And then the Flynn news today is devastating. He appears to have committed several criminal acts bordering on treason. I'm going to show you exactly what happened there. A lot of Turkey's in the news a lot here. We got Turkish Americans in the news. We got Turkey in the news. As it relates to Mike Flynn and Donald Trump, more temper tantrums from Donald Trump. Just a gigantic news story, news day for you guys, as usual these days. By the way, if you miss any part of this show, you become a member, you get the whole 2-hour show and watch it anytime you want without ads. That's tytnetwork.com/join. All right, let's do Roger Ailes. So Roger Ailes, well, admittedly legendary founder of Fox News. Now, he didn't own Fox News, Rupert Murdoch owns News Corp, but he did found it, has passed away. Now, that's not the only reason Roger Ailes is legendary. He's also legendary for, obviously, the infamy that he achieved near the end of his life, for the incredible amount of sexual harassment that he did, but also for his political exploits through Nixon, Reagan, Bush, and then George W. Bush, and Trump even as well. So look, a lot of negative things to say about Roger Ailes, and I won't hesitate. There's this whole nonsense about, oh, once someone has passed away, all of a sudden they're a good guy. No, that's not how it works. Or don't talk about it today. What are we gonna randomly bring it up 2.5 weeks from now? No, of course he died. We're gonna talk about it today. So we will pull no punches here for what Roger Ailes actually was. And how he died at the end was sad, apparently a little miserable, and I don't mourn that. So we'll get to that in the end. But the upside for Ailes is that he was effective. And so got to call it like it is, and we'll explain that as well. So let's begin to explain to you Roger Ailes' life and why he was actually, if you didn't know it, and I said this on the show all the time, one of the most powerful men in our lifetimes. And I argued from time to time, and I think I would still maintain that argument today, probably the most powerful person in America for decades and decades. So I'll explain to you why right now. So as we go to Huffington Post for our explanation of his life here, they say Ailes was widely recognized as a media visionary who targeted an underserved segment of the population and successfully portrayed the establishment media for millions of viewers as hopelessly liberal and out of touch with their concerns. That is certainly true. I think a lot of people thought he did it in a despicable way, but to give him credit, conservatives were longing for a media organization. He served that audience and he served it really well, and he got the ratings to prove it. So I didn't mind Fox News existing as a conservative media organization. That makes perfect sense. There's nothing wrong with it. I minded the lie of fair and balanced, which was preposterous on its face. And Roger Ailes, of course, knew that it was a lie. And in fact, I'm going to get to his plans about how he'd been planning it for almost all of his life. So Post continues, but Ailes didn't achieve cable news rating success simply by offering an ideological alternative. He stoked fears and racial resentment. And in the post 9/11 years, his network maligned Americans it deemed insufficiently patriotic and beat the drums of war for a Republican president, to say the least. There's a lot more on that as we go through his life. In fact, now, I don't know if you remember this, but he was at the Michael Douglas show as a producer. Now, that's where the allegations of sexual harassment began, and he would have lines of women there to audition, and he would basically say, if you sleep with me, you will get to go on the show, and if you don't, you won't. And there are countless examples of women now coming forward and saying he did that over and over and over again, and some horrific stories of him pulling his pants down and chasing women around the office. So we'll talk more about that in a second. And then he went into politics. In 1970, he wrote a memo for Nixon called A Plan for Putting the GOP on TV News, in which he urged the White House to fully embrace the power of television. Now, I read that memo. It is amazing. It's amazing for its raw honesty. It's amazing for how much they put it into execution and how well that it worked. And of course, how noxious it is. But So he meets Nixon in 1967 as Nixon's about to run again in 68. He actually, on the Michael Douglas show, he met him and he starts working with him. And in 70, he writes that memo. Inside the memo, he explains how Republicans should take over television. And he explains that, hey, you know what? People that are watching TV, it's super easy to do propaganda for them. And then that way we can basically brainwash them. Here, let me give you more details. Roger Ailes, this is a quote from him back then in the memo. He said, today television news is watched more often than people read newspapers, than people listen to radio, than people read or gather any other form of communication. The reason, people are lazy. With television, you just sit, watch, listen. The thinking is done for you. So there it is. That was Roger Ailes' plan all the way back in 1970. And boy, did he execute that on Fox News. So he knew, hey, my audience is stupid and lazy. I'm just going to brainwash them day in, day out with television. And then we're going to achieve Republican victories. Fox News has always intended to be a Republican propaganda outlet. And it continues to be that today. At least they should be honest about it. So, and by the way, when you read the details of that memo, and I covered this back when I was on MSNBC, it is amazing. He told Richard Nixon, for example, on a Christmas lighting ceremony, look, you should grab a kid and do it with him. It'll make you much more endearing to the country. But don't let the kid press the button to light the tree, because it'll make him seem more powerful than you. This is the level of detail that he puts into it. But if you do it and not the kid, it'll seem like you're not letting the poor kid do it. So make sure you and him press the button at the same time. And then you see it unfold right in front of you, Nixon and the kid. Nixon grabs the kid, he goes, let's do it at the same time, and they light up the Christmas tree. So he has been the man behind the curtain for all this time. He told Nixon how to behave, and that helped him win. And then later, George H.W. Bush, and of course, before that, Reagan. And then George W. Bush, he was absolutely pivotal in. I'll get to that in a minute as well. So let's keep going in his career. Ailes was called on to help President Ronald Reagan prepare for a 1984 re-election debate after his disastrous performance in an earlier debate. He later worked on Vice President George H.W. Bush's presidential campaign. Bush Sr. Tweeted out today that he probably would not have become president were it not for Roger Ailes. Now, I think that he actually had an even bigger role to play in George W. Bush's election. Now, this is not talked about nearly enough. Roger Ailes hired a person to run the vote count in the 2000 election at Fox News. You know who that person was? It was George W. Bush's cousin. And you know what happened on that fateful night when George W. Bush lost the popular vote and it was a statistical tie in Florida? There's no way that any reasonable, objective news organization should have called that election either way on that night. But there was one player in so-called news that was not reasonable or objective, that was intended to be Republican propaganda, and boy, he nailed it on that night. He had George Bush's cousin call the election, and the rest of the failures in the news media, as usual, went along with Roger Ailes and what had to be, you got to give him credit, his genius plan there. He said, look, I'll call it Fox News, I'll say it's fair and balanced, and I got to be honest with you, the rest of the mainstream media, you were all schmucks, and you played right into his hands. And there were story after story throughout all the years of how CNN and MSNBC executives would be watching what Fox News was doing and say, whoa, they're talking about it a lot, so I guess we should get on it, we don't want to be late. He played you like a fiddle. And on that night, they called the election for Bush, Fox News did first, and all the others panicked and said, oh my God, Fox News is calling it. We don't want to be late. And then they all called it. Later, when all the news organizations, well after the election and Bush was installed in office, did a recount of the whole state of Florida. Guess who had won? Not just the popular vote, the electoral vote. Al Gore, by every method of recounting, if you count, recounted the whole state of Florida. He had won the election in every way, but that night Fox News had George Bush's cousin call it in the state that George Bush's brother ran. And that's how Roger Ailes stole an entire election for the Republican Party. So was he monumentally important? Absolutely. Now, let's talk about the rest of his career where he ran into a lot of trouble. Again, now a little bit of background on how he got back into media after politics. After shifting to media in the late 1980s, Ailes served as a top executive at CNBC and at Channel America's Talking, a predecessor to MSNBC. He joined Rupert Murdoch in 1996 to create Fox News, which took off during the Clinton impeachment scandal in the late 1990s. By the early 2000s, Fox News was a top-rated cable news network, a distinction it holds today, to this day. And again, credit where credit is due, Fox News kicked the crap out of the other cable news stations because they knew how to serve their audience. And Roger Ailes knew exactly what kind of red meat they liked, whether it was positive news or not, whether it was the right thing to do or not, whether it helped the country or not. He gave them the red meat they wanted, and it helped them in the ratings. And look at how pivotal he was. He was at CNBC in the beginning, at MSNBC at the very beginning, and then at Fox News. And all these media organizations that he then turned around and called the liberal media had actually hired him to begin with. He knew they weren't liberal. He knew they were willing to hire him. He knew they were willing to go conservative, but he smeared them as liberal media anyway because it helped his propaganda. In fact, in that 1970 memo, he talked about how they should smear the media as liberal. And then they executed that for the next 5 decades or so, and they're still in the middle of doing Roger Ailes' plan. Amazing. Okay. Now, Huffington Post explains that Ailes also had a reputation for paranoia and vindictiveness and a tendency to smear and attack perceived enemies. And his wildly successful career is inextricably linked to the scandal that brought him down. Following a lawsuit filed in July by former Fox and Friends co-host Gretchen Carlson, dozens of women claimed that Ailes sexually harassed them at various points in his political and media career. Okay. Now, then we of course saw what in fact Roger Ailes had been all along. Back at the Mike Douglas show, again, literally took out his genitalia and chased women around the room with it. That's who Roger Ailes was. And at Fox News, apparently, he did over and over again, he would tell people he would tell women, you need to either sleep with me and you will get promoted, or if you don't sleep with me, you're going to get fired. And oftentimes, women wouldn't sleep with him, and then they would be removed from air. So all these Fox News hosts, the male hosts that are now like, oh, he's a patriot and he's a wonderful human being and what a great American warrior, that's because he didn't take his penis out and run around chasing you around the office, right? So that's the personal life that was so miserable and cruel. But what he did in his public life, you could say, hey, they're honest Republicans, that they just think that lower taxes will give us better economy, etc. But that's not what Roger Ailes did. So he did that kind of propaganda as well. But mainly he said, okay, you have to be worried about the other. Fear brings ratings, fear brings voters. So let's get them scared about blacks, let's get them scared about Latinos, let's get them scared about Muslims, let's get them scared about gay people. And he did it over and over again. And how many segments have we shown on the Young Turks? Well, they bring on a black guest to tell you how wrong black culture is and how all the violence is because of black people in the country. How many times did he have Bill O'Reilly go on the air and talk about Tiller the baby killer until Dr. Tiller was assassinated by a right-wing terrorist? He brought in Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck said that, all the outrageous things that he said, let alone that he said that Obama had a resentment and a racism basically against white people. And he brought in these murderer's row of bigots to poison the culture of America, the media of America, and the minds of so many people. And so now there are all these Fox News zombies out there who think, oh no, Barack Obama was not a citizen of the United States, he was a socialist, he was a Marxist. There are secret plots to bring in Sharia law into the country, and the immigrants are the criminals and the rapists, which of course brings us back to Donald Trump. So his final act was helping Trump to get elected as president this time around. Ailes also, as they explain here, advised Trump during the campaign. And the two men were longtime friends. Trump defended Ailes after allegations against the Fox News boss surfaced last year. Now, of course Trump did that. Trump was also an admitted sexual harasser, at least on the tapes that we obviously saw during the and heard during the campaign. So the result of all that sexual harassment was this. 21st Century Fox announced in a quarterly report just this month that it has had to pay a total of $45 million in costs, quote, related to settlements of pending and potential litigations. That's both Ailes and Bill O'Reilly, his acolyte as well, who also sexually harassed women. And of course, there's nothing done about it because Roger Ailes was running the station. Ailes himself reportedly received a payout of as much as $40 million. So sometimes there's justice in the world, and sometimes you never get that justice. So Roger Ailes became an incredibly wealthy and powerful man, in my opinion, poisoning the culture and the politics of this country for all that time. And unfortunately, he was fairly successful. But in his end, he didn't go out well. Gabriel Sherman, who has done some brilliant reporting about Ailes and Fox News, explained what happened at the end. He said Ailes was spending time apart from his wife in recent days. Given all the stories about sexual harassment, that is unsurprising, I suppose. Elizabeth Ailes had been in Palm Beach. Ailes was alone up in Garrison, New York. He explained further, per second family friend, on cause of death, Ailes fell in Palm Beach and had a blood clot fall from the fall. He suffered complications and then eventually passed away. So he died at the end, fairly alone. He fell and metaphorically couldn't get back up. And even Trump had to distance himself from Ailes at one point. So he wasn't advising Trump. He wasn't at Fox News. He had lost all of his power. So I'm glad he lived as long as he did to be able to see at the very end his defeat and humiliation. It was a long time coming. And if he had a worthy adversary on the other side, he would have come a long, long time ago. But the Democrats in this country got taken for a ride and they never knew what hit him. And the same thing with mainstream news. He pulled them along on that ride and they went full bore. They did everything that he said they would do. In that fateful memo in 1970, he outlined what he was going to do. And the schmucks in cable news and in the Democratic Party never figured out how to beat him until the very end. And they didn't beat him, he beat himself. So all of his monstrous designs finally caught up with him. And if today the mainstream or conservatives want me to shed a tear over Roger Ailes, who I think set this country back in so many different ways, well, they're going to be sorely mistaken, because I don't. I like that he died alone and humiliated. And in fact, one of the last things that anybody heard from him was when asked how he's doing, he said, quote, "Well, if you want to know if I'm suicidal, the answer is no." Well, the very fact that you have to answer that question and someone asks you near the end of your life, "Hey, Roger, you're in such bad shape. Are you suicidal?" Well, let's just put it this way. For all the conservatives that have poisoned our culture with their money, their greed, their bigotry, if the last sentence out of all their mouths is, "Well, I'm not exactly suicidal," that's not such a bad way for them to go, at least in my book. Good night, Roger Ailes, and you will not be missed. Okay, now that's my opinion. Let's go to the opinion of conservatives. Okay. So Roger Ailes has passed away. He, of course, was the founder of Fox News and helped Nixon, George H.W. Bush, George W. Bush, Ronald Reagan, all of them get elected, to some degree Donald Trump as well. Certainly promoted him for free over and over on Fox News. And of course, he was a serious sexual harasser. Up to $45 million in payments have been paid out to his victims. Dozens of victims never got paid in the first place. He'd been doing that sexual harassment from the 1960s all the way to last year when he was finally exposed. Now, that is not how Fox News hosts remember him. First, let me show you some of the weeping on air.
"Roger believed in hard work. He ran four political campaigns. Many people out there would say that he saved this country by starting the Fox News channel. Roger gave every single one of us on this couch an opportunity. He put food on our table. And you know, he went out in such a sad way, but who doesn't have sins? We all have our sins, we all have our cross to bear. And Roger, I will love you forever. You gave me an opportunity and I will forever, ever, ever be grateful. I know I would not have gotten this job if it weren't for you. And I hope that you rest in peace, Roger, and I hope that you are at peace. When we were all at our hardest times, he was there for me when I went through some really hard times. Janice, you okay? You want to say anything to Bill?
No, I wouldn't be here without that man. And when I was diagnosed with MS, he got on the phone and said, whatever we can do for your family, because we were all part of a family. And you know, he was a presence and he will be missed on this channel. He will be missed.
We were all part of a family. Well, I wouldn't say you all were. So look, I understand that they knew the guy, and if I knew the guy, even if he'd done some bad things, but he'd been great to me, I understand why I'd feel grief over that, and I would say nice things about him. But we don't know him, and personally, and he never did us any favors as a country. What we know is the abomination that he created at Fox News, how he stole at least the George W. Bush election on election night, let alone the help that he gave to conservatives in promoting not just their conservative ideals, but bigotry throughout the country. And we know like I said, the dozens of sexual harassment cases. So you tell us that he's been helpful to you, and I believe you, and I understand that's why you're upset. But I think there's a lot of other folks that he brought in that look just like you, that he did not have an intention of making part of the family. He had an intention, as we have seen, and it is documented and proven, and that's why the settlements were paid. He had the intention to sexually harass them and hopefully coerce them into sleeping with him. So if that's a guy who is part of your family, I don't think that's the guy to celebrate. So maybe you guys were lucky, and I assume obviously based on your reaction that you were, that he never got around to sexually harassing you. But there was a woman who was sitting in that exact seat named Gretchen Carlson on Fox and Friends on that show, who won $20 million because how much he wanted to sleep with her, how much he threatened her, and eventually removed her from air because she wouldn't give in to his demands to pleasure him sexually. So you'll excuse me if I'm not crying along with you. So now let me give you the reactions of other hosts and other conservatives. Bret Baier, of course, Fox News anchor, says, love and prayers to Beth and Zach, RIP Roger, you changed television as we know. Now that's relatively benign, and I don't have problems with that. He's obviously saying love to Roger Ailes' family, and they didn't do anything wrong. Super fair, obviously, and he did change television, that's true. Then you go to Geraldo Rivera, oh my God, Roger Ailes is gone, devastating news. And Erica and I send our condolences to Beth, their son Zach, and the entire family. He was a great man. Now, Geraldo defended him in the beginning of the sexual harassment allegations, then realized he was wrong, came out and said, well, he was more complicated. That's the euphemism that we're using now. When you're a monstrous pig who takes out your penis, and as he did once in the Mike Douglas show, and chases a woman around the room trying to touch her with it, apparently you're complicated, okay? So now that he's passed away, all of a sudden, overnight, he's a great man again. No, not buying it. Death does not give you redemption. Britt Hume says, terribly sad news. I guess that depends on your perspective. Sean Hannity says, today America lost one of its great patriotic warriors, Roger Ailes. For a decade, Roger Ailes has impacted American politics and media. It's true that he has impacted it, but I think I would argue and have argued today for the worse. Laura Ingram says, now she has guest hosted on Fox News, but it's not employed by Fox News. She says, Roger Ailes founded one of the most important and successful media outlets in American history. I will miss his friendship dearly, RIP. Well, again, I guess Laura was one of the lucky ones. Others did not miss his friendship at all. Brent Bozell, another conservative, says, the good Roger did for America is immeasurable. May he rest in peace. Now that's not an obnoxious comment, it's just one that I wholeheartedly disagree with. George Bush, the first George Bush, says he wasn't perfect, but Roger Ailes was my friend and I loved him. Not sure I would have been president without his great talent, loyal help, rest in peace. Now, George Bush, I've got mixed feelings about George H.W. Bush, but he did not run clean campaigns. He ran incredibly dirty campaigns, including the Willie Horton ad. And Ailes helped him to run those dirty campaigns. So I guess it's true, he wouldn't have been president without Ailes, neither would his son. Did that make the country better? I would argue it most certainly did not. Would have been nice to have, by the way, have someone paying attention when the president was handed a memo called Bin Laden determined to attack inside the United States. Thank you, Roger Ailes. We appreciate you putting George W. Bush into office by having his cousin call the election on election night, which then led to that disaster. This incompetent fool that you were happy was an incompetent fool, so you and your rich friends could all get all the tax cuts and all the deregulation that you wanted, but it cost the rest of us a horrible, horrible price. Finally, back to Sean Hannity, he says, his endless enthusiasm, energy, wit, humor, and raw instinctive intelligence will be greatly missed. Pretty sure that a lot of people did not find Roger Ailes funny, including the dozens of women that he said, either you must pleasure me or I will fire you and end your career. They didn't find that funny. All right, and Hannity ends by saying, but to his enemies know this, I say advantage Roger. In his mind, he just has a head start in preparing to kick your ass in the next life. Ooh. Since I don't believe there's a next life, here's probably what happened in his last moments. Oh yeah, I'm gonna kick your ass in the next life. Gone. No next life. You're just dead. That's all there is. I know people get so touchy when someone dies. It doesn't make you any better person the minute you die. I don't know why we have this insane reverence for the dead. It must be something that's part of our nature, but I don't get it. It's not logical. Roger Ailes is just as much of a horrible human being today as he was yesterday. He's just a dead, horrible human being. Will not be missed. Okay, now let's go to good news, okay? Okay, now I want to tell you about the wonderful work that you guys have done. So we told you that if you helped us hire investigative reporters, we would unleash them and we would try to hold people in power accountable. Now, the first reporter we ever hired was Jordan Cheriton. We did that through a membership, you guys being members of the Young Turks. And Jordan's been following several stories very closely, including Flint, Michigan. And recently there was a town hall there, and they held it in a church, and then they used that as an excuse to arrest some of the people who were just going to the town hall, who were citizens who had been poisoned just like everybody else there with the lead in the water, who were justifiably angry. Now I'm going to tell you a great update on that story in a second. But first, let me show you the arrest if you didn't see what happened originally. Here, watch.
Church, please remove your hats. If you don't know, the ladies is okay to wear their hats in the church, but gentlemen cannot wear their hats in the church, so please remove them. Please don't be in there trying to disrupt this meeting, because if you do, I'm going to escort you out, and I'm only going to take you to the back door, and then you're going to jail. I'm not going to play with nobody tonight. That's just how it's going to be.
Now, here's where it's over.
Don't get on to the point, man. This is over.
Then do what you're going to do.
Come on, Mr.
If you resist, and if you... I'm going to push out of you. I'm leaving.
You and your wife.
Oh, I got to get my coat.
Watch my cuffs. Grab my keys. I gotta secure my car, guys.
Hold on.
Oh, there's your keys. There's your keys.
Who do you want to give the keys to?
You cussing at the church. You cussing at the church.
So you can watch all the videos for yourself at youtube.com/TYTpolitics, but you'll never see any of the people who went to that town hall raise their hands against the cops, because that didn't happen, and it's not on any of the videos. They were arrested for raising their voice, and as you heard at the end, they're cussing in the church, disrespecting the church, which of course is not a crime. And that's why you need reporters to point that out. If you have reporters, as we did with Jordan in this case, go over and over and say, what is the crime they're being charged with? Why are they being charged? Why did you hold the town hall event in a church? Did you know the town hall rules must apply no matter where you hold it? You can't have church rules apply at a town hall. That is not legal in the state of Michigan. So now I want to go to the piece that Jordan wrote just last night on our Medium page, medium.com/TheYoungTurks. He said, in follow-up interviews by TYT Politics with five members of the Flint Six, a similar pattern emerged. None had a clue what they were arrested for, what stage the supposed investigation into their alleged crimes is at, or when the uncertainty would end. And then they got lawyers from the ACLU, and of course they helped tremendously too. And then Jordan went and asked a US congressman from Michigan what he thought of the situation. And the spokesperson for Representative Dan Kitty wrote in, until Congressman Kitty sees the people who did this to Flint charged and brought to justice, he finds it hard to believe that charges should be brought against victims of the water crisis. And lo and behold, after the US congressman says that, guess what happened? The charges are now dropped. That is great news. This is what I hope we can do with investigative reporting, bring you real change and a little bit of justice. So let me fill you in on the rest. On Thursday, Genesee County Prosecutor David Layton will announce there will be no misdemeanor or felony state charges brought against six Flint residents arrested at a town hall on April 20th. Jordan wrote that last night, and that happened today. So the charges are gone. We told you there was no reason to believe that they had done any felonies or misdemeanors, and disrespecting a church is not a crime. David Layton, a prosecutor in Genesee County, says, I believe we acted timely and appropriately, received the reports Monday, read them Tuesday, discussed them Wednesday, and made a decision. The city and the county are separate entities. I don't tell them what to do and vice versa, nor do I arrest people. We review warrant requests and based on the law and circumstances determine whether to authorize or not. In other words, look, man, I didn't arrest them. And now you're putting pressure on and asking me to explain if they're going to be charged. And my answer is no. No, there is no crime here, so they're free to go. Now, there is one more layer to this story. Unfortunately, it's not completely clear because there's the county, now the city. They say, although the prosecutor's office, or Jordan does, although the prosecutor's office won't bring charges, he did suggest potential charges aren't completely off the table. The matter should be returned to the Flint City Attorney for her review, Layton said. If she believes misdemeanor charges are warranted, that's up to her to issue them under city ordinance. So let's continue to keep up the pressure to make sure that the Flint City Attorney also does the right thing. But guys, you helped hire that reporter. He stayed on the story. Now those people who might have gone to jail in a terrible injustice did not go to jail, are free to go. That is not on their record. Thank you. I told you, together we can make a difference. And every day, if you fight for justice, you never know. You just might get it. All right, back on the Young Turks, let me read a couple of quick tweets for you guys. Hashtag TYT Live to talk to us during the show. The Mathematician says about ALC, created a propaganda machine that fed ignorance, racism, and monstrosity of US conservatism and may ultimately destroy America. Well, let's hope it doesn't get to that, but that is what I agree with you on, unfortunately, the results. Shakira Graham says the weeping on Fox over Roger Ailes is North Korean-esque, disgusting. Roast in hell. Now, Shakira, that last sentence I don't agree with, roast in hell. Luckily, I don't think there is a hell. I think it just lights out. And the last thing he probably thought is, oh, well, I wasn't suicidal. Okay. Carl J. Peterson says about the Flint story, I hope that they still take them to court for false arrest. Now, Carl, I appreciate your fervor on that, and I share it, but it's fairly unlikely, but I'm just thrilled that we actually made sure that those guys are all right and don't go to prison, the guys who went to the town hall and who were citizens of Flint. Okay, now let me tell you about the FCC. Okay, now the FCC is being led by Ajit Pai. He was a former Verizon lawyer and has throughout thought that net neutrality should not exist, that the internet providers like Verizon, Comcast, and the others should be able to discriminate and slow some websites down, speed others up, and basically destroy the internet as we know it, and just hand almost all the power to decide who has websites that work, that function, and who don't, to just a couple of handful of internet providers throughout the country who often have either monopolies or duopolies throughout the entirety of the United States. Okay, so today they went a little further in executing that plan. Federal Communications Commission Chairman Ajit Pai's plan to roll back net neutrality rules took its first step forward on Thursday, according to The Hill. The commission voted 2-1 along party lines to advance Pai's restoring internet freedom proposal, which would repeal current net neutrality protections. That is as Orwellian a title as you could possibly have for a regulation, restoring internet freedom, which would in reality destroy internet freedom and hand all the power over to about five companies. This is so loathsome and so obviously against internet freedom that this is a rare issue that liberals and conservatives unite over on the internet. The only people that don't unite over it are the Republican politicians who are bought lock, stock, and barrel by those same five companies. Their voters are not with them, no one on the internet's with them. Even the most diehard Donald Trump supporters online go, wait, wait, wait. Our websites can be shut down if we don't pay a ransom to those five companies? That sounds like a terrible idea. That's right. And not only that, it not only advantages those five companies, it also gives a huge advantage to other crony capitalists who could then go and legally bribe through campaign donations other politicians to say, hey, you know, in my field, why don't you give me an advantage and slow down the websites of my competitors? I'll pay off the politicians and then I'll go pay off the internet providers. And I've got more money than you, so you no longer have freedom. All of a sudden, nobody can go to your website because it's too slow. How do you like that? Internet freedom, restoring internet freedom bill. They are absolutely Orwellian. Hill continues to explain, Pai's proposal would undermine existing net neutrality rules by undoing the legal basis of the regulations. They say, no, the regulations were keeping freedom away from the internet. Really? The internet seems pretty free right now. They say, no, businesses just can't thrive on the internet because of the current rules. Preposterous. Google, Facebook, and some of the other tech giants wrote back, yeah, we're doing okay. And the internet freedom is what allowed us to build these companies and break the monopoly that the rest of the media had. And to their credit, they could actually do crony capitalism too, but they're not. They have the ability to pay the ransom to Verizon, Comcast, etc., and then kill off their competition, but they're not. They're actually, for the moment being, doing the right thing and fighting for internet freedom. And almost all the investors, and so we also have some rich folks on our side for a change here, that put money into internet ventures go, no, we put money in expecting these rules. Don't talk to me about how you're gonna restore freedom by destroying the rules that have always existed on the internet to keep it free. It is a total and utter lie. The Obama era net neutrality regulations, again, as The Hill explains, passed in 2015 as the Open Internet Order, aimed to create a level playing field on the internet by ensuring that broadband providers treated all online content the same. And that is exactly what they're looking to end now as Ajit Pai looks to destroy internet freedom and unsurprisingly give a massive, gigantic advantage to the company that previously employed him and paid him a lot of money, and my guess is will employ him again and pay him even more money after he's done instituting these new rules. Pai wants to continue the Trump administration's assault on free speech and political dissent and hand over control of the internet to his corporate cronies at AT&T, Comcast, and Verizon. That's according to Mary Alice Krim, Free Press field director, and I think she is exactly right. So if you care about freedom, doesn't matter if you're a right winger or a left winger or anywhere in the middle, if you care about the sites that you like or the sites you want to create, well, guess what? You're not going to be able to afford the ransom to those companies. So fight for freedom now before they take it away from you. Okay. By the way, I should give quick credit to Ed Markey, Senator Ed Markey, and Senator Ron Wyden. So not every day that you see Democrats that are actually fighting for the right things, and they were actually out there in the hot protests that joined the actual voters and people who are mad about this. So credit to them for showing up. Okay, now let's go talk about Syria. Donald Trump's ratings are, of course, very down. He's in the middle of a gigantic mess over the firing of James Comey and the investigation of Mike Flynn, the secret intelligence he gave to the Russians, and the list goes on. So when was the last time Donald Trump's ratings went up or he was applauded by the establishment media? Well, the last time he bombed Assad's government in Syria. So guess what he did today? Out of the blue, not because of a chemical attack, not for any stated reason that seems apparent to anyone else, he's like, I'm going to bomb Assad's government in Syria again. Now, the last time he did that, all the media fell over themselves, going, oh my God, he's now a president, he's now awesome. I hope they don't make that same mistake. So let me give you the details from USA Today. A US airstrike in Syria on Thursday targeted pro-regime forces who were threatening a coalition base where advisors train anti-Islamic state fighters, according to US military official. They explained that the airstrike targeted a tank and two earth movers that were building fighting position within the defensive zone, the official said. The official did not provide an estimate of casualties. So let me decipher that for you guys. Oh, the Assad guys were not, were you know, being problematic in our fight with ISIS. That's our official excuse. So we bombed a tank and two earth movers? That's all? That's it? You know, and we warned the Russians ahead of time. So in other words, hey, I did a bombing over there. Why, add to ISIS or something, right? Yeah, I don't know, I don't have a chemical attack as an excuse now. ISIS, I did an attack, everybody, are you back on my side? It's the cheapest trick in the book. USA Today further explains the official described Thursday's strike as a defensive action that does not change the US policy of focused military efforts on defeating ISIS. In other words, Russia, don't worry, we're not actually targeting Assad, because Russia wants to protect the dictator Assad. So what we're just trying to do is bump up our poll numbers here. Now, of course, we're told over and over again that we do the bombings because we care about civilians. But what you might not have heard is a couple of days ago, we killed a lot of civilians. Air raids on an Islamic State held village and town in Syria have killed at least 32 civilians over the past 2 days, activists said on Monday. It's Monday of this week, that's the Associated Press. They explained it was not immediately clear who was behind the strikes on the village of Akrishi on Sunday and the town of Bukumal on the Syrian-Iraqi border on Monday, and the activists blamed the US-led coalition. So when Assad killed those kids, and he's killed more than the people that died in that chemical attack, 84 people died there, including a lot of kids and civilians, that is outrageous, and the whole world is united. When we do it, oh, come on, that was just an honest mistake when we killed those 32 civilians. What are you getting all hurt over, okay? The Pentagon acknowledged late last month that at least 352 civilians have been killed by coalition strikes in two countries since the start of the air campaign against ISIS in 2014. However, activists monitoring groups say the number is much higher. Access is restricted to ISIS-held areas, and details are hard to come by. But how about women and kids? Well, the Observatory, which is based out of Britain, said 12 women were killed in strikes on the village of Akrishi. So yes, we do that as well. Now, you don't hear about that in the news too much. Credit to the Associated Press for covering it. It is interesting what the rest of, especially television news, chooses to market and what they choose not to market. So now you know the reality. Okay, now let's go on to the guy who ordered those strikes, kind of, Donald Trump. Okay, so Donald Trump is in a world of trouble. He's now got a special counsel, Robert Mueller, former director of the FBI, who's investigating Trump campaign connections to Russia. Lindsey Graham walked out of a classified meeting today, and he's a US senator, and he said now they will be severely limited to conduct any investigations in Congress. Why? Because it is now considered an active criminal investigation. So that's your latest turn. And so how is Donald Trump going to respond to all of this? Now, a couple of days ago, he went and spoke. And at the time, he had said, look, at the way I've been treated lately. Now, this is at a commencement, and he should be talking about them and their future, but he's not. He complained after telling the cadets to never give up on the in the face of adversity. But he didn't talk about their adversity, he talked about his own. He said, especially by the media, no politician in history, and I say this with great surety, has been treated worse or more unfairly. Of course, that's not remotely true. Whether they've been treated badly also depends on what they did. Now, back in the day, it didn't necessarily depend on that. If he read any history at all, that he would know that the press in the beginning of the country was absolutely vicious. They would put the worst kind of rumors about Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, and the press corroborated or not. So presidents have been treated far, far worse. And in fact, all the billions of dollars in free media that he got is what led him to become president in the first place. But the guy cannot stop crying. It's super ironic that he ends a lot of tweets with baby, because that is exactly what he said. By the way, we have a president of the United States that ends tweets with baby. Okay, accusing his opponents of being babies, he now calls Chuck Schumer, the main Democratic senator in the Senate, crying Chuck. Well, that's ironic, because we're about to see him cry even more, Trump is. But they decided that after his speech to the cadets, that it was a wrong strategy, they should be a little bit more level-headed. They brought in a whole bunch of people into the Oval Office, had a strategy meeting, and then they came out with a more cautious statement. Okay? They said, as I've stated, they claimed that Donald Trump wrote this, of course that's not true, but he did agree to it. He said, as I've stated many times, a thorough, he doesn't know the word thorough. Anyway, a thorough investigation will confirm what we already know. There was no collusion between my campaign and any foreign entity. I look forward to this matter concluding quickly. In the meantime, I will never stop fighting for the people and the issues that matter most to the future of our country. How, just a side note, how obvious is it that Donald Trump didn't write that statement? When's the last time Donald Trump talked about foreign entities? Okay, if he, Donald Trump, wrote that statement, it would have been like, okay, fine, fine, I won't talk too much about it, okay? And let the guy do this investigation. Let him look into it. He won't find anything. Baby. Anyway, so they decide, and Trump signs on to it, we're not going to cry about this anymore. We're just going to say, hey, let the guy do his investigation. He's not going to find anything anyway. Now, that's a rational approach. So can he stick to it? Of course not. So he goes right back on Twitter and says, with all the illegal acts that took place in the Clinton campaign and Obama administration, there was never a special counsel appointed. What illegal acts under the Obama administration? The Republicans investigated everything under the sky and the moon under Obama, and they didn't find anything. Benghazi, Benghazi, Benghazi. They did 9 Republican-led investigations and concluded at the end of them. Not Democrats, Republicans concluded, oops, there's no wrongdoing here, there's no crime. We, you know, basically, they just ginned it all up, okay? But he's, Trump is going around, oh, I'm such a poor baby. They keep picking on me just because I keep committing obstruction of justice and witness tampering, and I probably did a giant financial deal with the Russians. Why didn't they go after Obama? So the baby continues. He says, this is the single greatest witch hunt of a politician in American history. Well, you, for God's sake, stop crying already. Jesus Christ. Nope, he's not going to stop. And then he went on air and he did it again. Listen to the bitch. I mean, witch.
Was this the right move, or is this part of a witch hunt?
Well, I respect the move, but the entire thing has been a witch hunt. And there is no collusion between certainly myself and my campaign. But I can always speak for myself and the Russians, zero. Believe me, there's no collusion. Russia is fine, but whether it's Russia or anybody else, my total priority, believe me, is the United States of America. So thank you very much.
He added, it's such a witch hunt. Hey, grow up, man. You're the commander in chief. Man up already. Is this what you guys wanted? All you betas, all you cucks out there who voted for Donald Trump? You don't even know what the guy stands for, but you're like, oh, he's my alpha. I'm going to vote for him. What kind of an alpha is this? Every time he's tweaked, he comes out. He's like, I'm the witch hunt. They're coming to get me. Somebody help me. I'm just a poor little baby. Bitch. Okay, we move forward.
Russia's fine. Russia's fine.
What does that mean, Russia's fine? Okay. Anyway, Chaffetz. Oh, no. Shoot, I got to take a break. All right, guys. Real quick, let's take the break. I'll do Chaffetz and Flynn when we come back. The Flynn news is devastating. All right, back on the Young Turks. I got a ton of stories for you guys. So let me just read 2 tweets. Rita Ann writes in, quote, restore internet freedom equals the freedom of telecom companies to rob you blind. Brandon Neal says, if Obama went on an apology tour, Trump is going on a crybaby tour. Pretty much agreed there. Okay. And by the way, in one of the tweets where he talked about the special counsel, of course, for the second time, he misspelled counsel. Somebody, for God's sake, check the tweets. But they can't get a control over the guy. All right, let's go to Jason Chaffetz. Chaffetz. Okay. So Jason Chaffetz is in charge of the Oversight Committee in the House. That's why he wants to get the hell out of Dodge. I told you that things would be turning south for Donald Trump when Republicans start backing out of the room. I told you that from day one. And then we saw that Chaffetz said, hey, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and resign because he doesn't want that job. It's a politically lose-lose situation for him. If he goes aggressively after Trump, the Republican voters and his base will hate him. If he doesn't go after Trump, then he's not doing his job, and he himself can get into a lot of trouble if it turns out that Trump did criminal acts or other people in his administration did criminal acts. So he just wants to get out. So he said in the beginning, oh, I'm done after this term. Then he said, you know what? I'm not going to even wait till the end of the term. Now we find out. He's like, no, I got to get out of here. This thing's going much, much faster than I expected. So Talking Points memo reports 2 days after threatening to use his subpoena pen to get his hands on James Comey's reported memos describing his encounters with President Donald Trump, Representative Jason Chaffetz on Thursday expressed skepticism as to whether they actually even existed. So before he came out and said, I've got my subpoena pen ready to get those Comey memos. Then apparently somebody pulled him aside and had a talking to him and like, no, Jason, you're about to leave Congress. You don't get the bribes and all the jobs that you want as lobbyists or going to Fox News or wherever you want to go if you don't play ball. Now, be a good little boy and go back out there and say, what memos? What memos? Subpoena? Did I say subpoena? I don't know what memos you're talking about. Jason Chaffetz said on Good Morning America, I don't think they should have actually appointed somebody about the special counsel. I've not seen any evidence of actual collusion. Where's the actual crime that they think they need a special prosecutor to prosecute? I haven't seen that. There's been a lot of flailing, but that flailing started before January 20th. Oh, all of a sudden, your donors talked to you and told you which direction to go to, huh, Jason? You're not so tough anymore, right? Well, you've seen no evidence of possible crimes. How about when he told Comey that he should stop the Flynn investigation? That's obstruction of justice. Now, that doesn't mean you proved it yet. That's why it's your job to investigate it. And if it turns out there's nothing there, then you can prove that it didn't happen. Wouldn't that be a wonderful opportunity for you? Now, you don't want that because you know it did happen. Are there potential crimes? Of course there are. Witness tampering, obstruction of justice, let alone the actual crime itself of dealing with the Russians and God knows promising them what at our expense, at America's expense. Now, we go to the Hill. House Oversight Committee Chairman Jason Chaffetz is expected to announce Thursday that he will leave Congress by the end of June. Oh, now it's an absolute panic. Before, maybe by then, no, I gotta go sooner. No, I gotta go by June, June's next month. I gotta go, man. What if the memos come out and I'm stuck? I don't wanna get stuck. I hate this job. I gotta get out of here before I get caught between a rock and a hard place. Total, utter panic. Washingtonian reported last week that Chaffetz has been telling fellow House Republicans that he will join Fox News possibly as soon as July. So, for him, that's a win-win. I get the hell out of Dodge before the Trump thing drags us all down. And then I can say, it wasn't me, man. I wasn't even in Congress. Number two, I go get paid while I'm getting ready to run for governor of Utah. Number three, I get paid by an organization where I get to do propaganda for my own party, for my own race. It's a perfect win-win. Who the hell wants to be in Congress during Trump? I go to Fox News and I get the money, I get the media, I get everything I want without all any of the headaches. That's why he's doing it. But no, he writes a letter telling us it's because of his family. This is why people hate politicians. Jason, nobody believes that. Even your own supporters don't believe that. Even they're not that stupid. So let's give you some of the letter. He says, when I first ran for Congress in 2008, I promised I would get in, serve, and get out. Let's pause there for a second. Yeah, but you just ran for Congress 6 months ago. This term is only less than 4 months old. Did you tell the voters when you were running, hey, you know what, I'm going to get in and then 4 months later I'm going to get out. I'm not going to serve the whole thing. You guys are suckers for voting for me. No, I plan to just use this for my own benefit and then get out a lot quicker than I told you. I don't think you told them that. And what is it with Republicans who love to quit? Sarah Palin, oh, granted, I love being governor of Alaska. I love the state of Alaska. I'm going to run for vice president. I didn't get it. I'm going to go get a reality show instead. They all quit and run to TV. Okay, continuing with that letter, he said, I told voters I did not believe Congress should be a lifetime career. I knew from day one that my service there would not last forever. Oh, you principled guy, then why didn't you not run last time? You just ran the race. Why didn't you come to this conclusion earlier if you said from day one you knew that it wouldn't last? Okay, he says, my life has undergone some big changes over the last 18 months. Yeah, Trump got elected. Those changes have been good, if you say so. But as I celebrate my 50th birthday in March, the reality of spending more than 1,500 nights away from my family over 8 years hit me harder than it had before. So when you ran again 6 months ago, you didn't give a damn about your family. Now all of a sudden that you got to investigate Trump, you say, oh, my family, right, my family. And in the letter he keeps talking about, oh, my wonderful children, and the one is doing this, and the other one has got wings now, and it's just, oh, my family, I just realized I had a family. Why didn't somebody tell me when I was running the campaign that I had a family? He says, I've slept on a cot in my office largely to save money for the Chaffetz family, but also to remind myself that my service there was temporary. Though the time away and the travel has been a sacrifice, our family has always been united. That public service was the right thing to do. We feel my time in Congress has been well spent, but it now seems the right time to turn the page. Yeah, I know. It was all giant sacrifice. You didn't want the money or the power. You didn't want to take a high-powered and even more better paying job at Fox News and then later as a lobbyist. You didn't want any of that, but you made the sacrifice for public service because you care about the public so much. Come on, does a single Chaffetz voter believe that? This is why America can't stand politicians. You guys are so obviously full of crap. Okay, Chaffetz, go make some money. Run away, like a little girl. Run away. Sorry, girls. Okay, I got a 4-year-old. She'd be way, way more courageous than this guy. Okay, anyway. Whoever wants, stay. Whoever wants, run. Okay, now let's go to the, believe it or not, the biggest story of the day, okay? And that turns us to Michael Flynn. Okay. Mike Flynn was a national security advisor for Donald Trump. He worked on his campaign. And if there's one thing we know about Mike Flynn, man, he had a lot of issues with the government of Erdogan. That's the president of Turkey. I know it because Flynn said it, and he said it emphatically. He had a lot of trouble with Muslims overall. And remember, Turkey is 99% Muslim. So let me tell you about that. Last July, Flynn praised a coup attempt against Erdogan, criticizing the Turkish leader for being too close to President Barack Obama and calling the coup, quote, worth clapping for. Yes, we're applauding the coup against Erdogan. If you're Mike Flynn, you think that was wonderful. How about Muslims overall? He said, quote, fear of Muslims is rational. And he capitalized rational. He said, Islam is not a real religion, but a political ideology masked behind a religion. So, well, this is why conservatives like Mike Flynn. He is a man of his word, and he's going to say it like it is. Islam is bad, and Turkey even worse. God, thank God they did that coup against Erdogan. But then something curious happened. Let's go to the Huffington Post on this one. Flynn shifted to supporting Erdogan only after a Dutch company headed by a man with ties to Erdogan's government hired his intelligence firm early in August. By November, Flynn had flip-flopped entirely. We need to see the world from Turkey's perspective, he wrote in an opinion piece published on Election Day. This is the man of principle. Turkey's the worst. I'm glad they did a coup against Erdogan. Wait a minute. Now, I didn't know I was going to get paid by them. No, we need to see things from Turkey's perspective. Okay, it gets worse. So how much did it take to bribe Mike Flynn? Well, you know, to be fair, a decent amount. It was a fact, that as the Miami Herald and McClatchy newspapers explains, that Flynn disclosed himself in a declaration saying that, yes, I did get money from people related to the Turkish government to the Foreign Agent Registration Unit of the Justice Department in early March. According to Flynn's paperwork, he was paid $530,000 for work, quote, that could be construed to have principally benefited the Republic of Turkey. So now he should have filed that much earlier, and it's actually a significant legal issue for him that he did not file that when he was advising Trump, when he was getting state secrets, and then when he was national security advisor. But in March, he finally files it and goes, oh yeah, I was kind of working for the Republic of Turkey. Okay, and so what did Michael Flynn write after he got paid that sum of money? In the Hill, he wrote, our ally Turkey is in crisis and needs our support. That was the headline. And then he wrote, in this crisis, it is imperative that we remember who our real friends are. The ones who bribe us for $530,000. Oops, I didn't mean to write that part. Yes, this is Mike Flynn. It's not a matter of opinion. It's not whether the right wing is right or the left wing is right. Mike Flynn is a man who could easily be bought. The Russians bought him for $33,000. Apparently, the Turks overpaid him. That's what they gave him to go sit next to Vladimir Putin to celebrate RT's 10th anniversary. He didn't report that either at the time. And as a former military officer, he's supposed to report that. That's another legal violation. This guy's in a world of trouble. And if you're a conservative, you still have his back after knowing that he flipped and all of a sudden is in favor of the Turks and for you right wingers filled with bigotry, now he supports the Muslims. Why? Because he got paid. Where's your allies now, Mike Flynn? You don't have any because we all know you're deeply corrupt. And this is the guy that Trump continues to back to this day. And he knew some of this stuff, and it allowed him to be the national security advisor anyway. So now let's go to more great reporting by McClatchy newspapers, because this is not just, hey, he could have done damage to US interests for his own behalf. Apparently he did. So let's go to their explanation of what happened. They say that one of Trump administration's first decisions about the fight against the Islamic State was made by Mike Flynn weeks before he was fired. And it conformed to the wishes of Turkey, whose interests, unbeknownst to anyone in Washington, he'd been paid more than $500,000 to represent. The decision came 10 days before Donald Trump had been sworn in as president in a conversation with President Barack Obama's national security advisor, Susan Rice, who had explained the Pentagon's plan to retake Islamic State's de facto capital of Raqqa with Syrian Kurdish forces, whom the Pentagon considered the US's most effective military partners. Obama's national security team had decided to ask for Trump's sign off, since the plan would all but certainly be executed after Trump had become president. Flynn didn't hesitate. According to timelines distributed by members of Congress in the weeks since, Flynn told Rice to hold off a move that would delay the military operation for months. He told them, according to notes taken that are now part of the timeline, and we see it in Dianne Feinstein's report on this and others, he said, quote, don't approve it. Don't approve an operation against ISIS, because the leader of Turkey, Erdogan, doesn't want that operation to happen. This is the same Erdogan that he thought should have had a coup go against him. He applauded the coup that would have removed and perhaps executed Erdogan. Then he gets paid $500,000 by people connected to Erdogan's government. All of a sudden, he's Erdogan's best friend and stopping our fight, the US fight against ISIS, because Erdogan told him to. That's who Mike Flynn is. Okay. He told The New Yorker in February that Obama had two narrowly defined efforts to defeat the group, that's ISIS, and called for fighting these guys on the battlefield. That's what he said in public. In private, he's telling Trump and the Obama team, no, don't fight them in the battlefield. Don't fight them in the battlefield. Why? At the time, no one knows he's getting paid $500,000 by Turkey. We only find that out in March, later. This is exactly what we're talking about when we say, hey, these private payments to people like Flynn and possibly Trump could they affect our national interests? Could they work for their own financial interests and actually hurt US national interests? Yes, the answer is overwhelmingly yes, and almost certainly what happened in this case. Now, back to McClatchy newspapers, in the Miami Herald today, report his position, Flynn's position, was consistent with the wishes of Turkey, which had long opposed the United States partnering with the Kurdish forces, and which was his undeclared client. Now, at the time, the people who had arranged this on the Turkish side started bragging in public. Ekim Optekin is a Turkish businessman who helped to arrange this deal. He said, we have spoken with his advisors, referring to Trump, and security team to understand what their vision is for Middle East and Syria. In other words, don't worry, I got this. I already talked to them, and it's true. He did talk to Mike Flynn. He said, according to the Miami Herald, that he was optimistic that the Trump administration would be more sympathetic to Turkish interests. Well, after you give him $500,000 to the national security advisor, yeah, apparently he was much more sympathetic to you. He couldn't have been more sympathetic to you when previously he couldn't have been less sympathetic. And then Optekin says at the end, it's not just that we are in disagreement with some Obama policies like Syria, but on the Trump side, we saw a willingness to look at these things differently. Well, now they want to cover their bases, the Turkish side here. So like, okay, well, we just flat out bribed him, but we called him lobbyists here. And in America, all that is legal, so we just give him a check as a lobbyist. Now, if the schmuck had just registered as a foreign agent, yes, it would have created problems for him in whether he would have gotten the National Security Administration job in the first place, or National Security Agency. But at least it would have been legal. In America, you can be legally bribed by these foreign countries. It's insane, right? So, but they're like, but let's make sure we grease the big guy too. So, in another indication of the close ties between the new administration and Turkey under Flynn, the Turkish US Business Council's annual summit, which is chaired by, hey, look at that, the same guy, Optekin, moved its meeting to the Trump International Hotel in Washington this year. The summit, which is in its 36th year, had in previous years been at the Ritz-Carlton. The new location was announced the day before Flynn was fired. So hey, Trump, don't worry, we moved it from the Ritz-Carlton to your hotel, you now get paid too. That's a clear violation of the Emoluments Clause. The Turkish intentions here are super clear. They are intending to influence the Trump administration, and they did. We delayed an attack against ISIS, not because it was the right thing for America to do, but because it was a thing that the Turkish government wanted and paid for here in America. These are the guys that are patriots, please. Now, finally, when Mike Flynn did file those papers, they explained, according to the filing, he signed the contract with Uptick, his firm, on August 9th. Trump received his first classified intelligence briefing on August 18th, a meeting that Flynn attended. As Trump's national security advisor in the White House, Flynn had access to even more highly classified intelligence. He sat in on most, if not all, of Trump's phone conversations and meetings with foreign leaders. Now, at the time, he did not tell them that he was actually working for some of those foreign leaders. If they can prove it, and it seems abundantly clear, but I mean prove it in court, those are some very serious crimes that Mike Flynn might be on the hook for. What was that about locker up? We'll get to that in a second. Okay. Flynn's lawyer has said that he called Trump's transition team before the inauguration, asking whether Flynn should register as a foreign agent. Uh-oh. So apparently, he told Trump, hey, I'm getting paid by Turkey, let alone the Russians. And Trump heard it and was like, I don't know, man, sure, come on in, be my national security advisor anyway. What a disastrous decision. So now Trump might be on the hook for some of these legal issues as well. So what are the legal issues? Failure to registering as a foreign agent is a federal crime. There is a renewed focus on getting to the bottom of what Flynn did and what Trump knew. So that's a serious federal crime. Now, one more thing. Some members of Congress, in private conversations, have even used the word treason to describe Flynn's intervention, though experts doubt that his actions qualify. Now, in order for it to be treason, you have to actually actively help an enemy and one that we are at war with. So now, Turkey is not an enemy. Turkey is an ally of the United States. So that wouldn't qualify as treason. But he did stop an attack against ISIS, and ISIS is an enemy. Sounds like treasonable suspicion to me. Okay, now I'm going to leave the last word to Mike Flynn. Hey, Mike, in cases like this where national security is endangered, what do you think should happen? Let's find out.
We do not need a reckless president who believes she is above the law. Lock her up. That's right. That's right. Lock her up. I'm going to tell you what. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. She put our nation's security at extremely high risk with her careless use of a private email server. Lock her up. Lock her up. You guys are good. Damn right. You're exactly right. There's nothing wrong with that. You know why we're saying that? We're saying that because if I, a guy who knows this business, if I did a tenth of what she did, I would be in jail today.
Looking forward to it, Mike. Okay. One more story about Mike Flynn for you guys, and it has to do with Trump. Okay. New story out. It turns out they claim Mike Flynn didn't even want to be national security advisor, but Donald Trump asked him to do it. Now, there is another twist in this story that is very important to what's happening today. So let me tell you what it is from the top. The Daily Beast is reporting President Donald Trump pressured a reluctant Michael Flynn into accepting a job as the White House top national security official, even after Flynn warned the president that he was under investigation over undisclosed lobbying on behalf of a foreign government, the Daily Beast has learned. Okay, this partly goes to Trump's stupidity. Are you kidding me? That's toxic. Why the hell would you put him in charge of the national security apparatus? Okay. Michael Leadon, the co-author of Flynn's The Field of Flight, says, so he's a good associate and friend of Mike Flynn. He says he did not want to be national security advisor. He didn't want to be in the government. He wanted to go back to private life, but Trump insisted on it. Now, look, everybody's got their own interests here, and they might be trying to protect Flynn, his friends here. And are they going to throw Trump under the bus to make that happen? Maybe. And boy, Mike Flynn knows a lot of things about Donald Trump. That could get interesting. So they continue. Trump's pressuring of Flynn to take the job came even though Flynn had informed the Trump transition team that he was under active FBI investigation over undisclosed lobbying on behalf of a Dutch company, lobbying that Flynn now admits may have advanced the interests of the Turkish government. Okay, there's more to this story, but if we just stopped here, it was monumentally stupid of Donald Trump to hear all that and go, okay, come into my administration anyway. Be my national security advisor, one of the most important jobs in the government. Yeah, you want to work for a foreign government while being one of the most important guys that decide what we're going to do with foreign policy and our national security? Yeah, come on in, Mike. Okay. The president's continued loyalties to his ousted former aide is so strong, in fact, that the two have remained in touch despite their potential that their communication could be portrayed as White House interference in a federal investigation. What? He's calling Mike Flynn? That's insane. And as usual, incredibly stupid. Well, that could open you up to another crime, actually a host of crimes, including witness tampering. I thought, and it was Daily Beast reporting from last week, as I'm going to tell you in a sec, that they had talked him out of it. Apparently, it's not. They didn't talk him out of it. He called Flynn anyway. Trump's White House attorneys warned him repeatedly against communicating with Flynn after his firing. As usual, the knucklehead didn't listen to his attorneys. The two have stayed in touch, according to a Yahoo News report Thursday, confirmed by multiple White House and administration sources. And Daily Beast then talked to other White House officials. They also confirmed it. He's talking to Flynn. A disastrous and possibly illegal idea, okay? News that they remained in touch flatly contradicts repeated and adamant White House denials last week that Trump and his former national security advisor had been communicating since Flynn's ouster. So they denied it. No, they're not communicating. As usual, it was a lie. As usual, they now, for I don't know if it's the Flynn guys that are outing him, it's people who are working against Trump's interests. I don't know what it is, or if it's just Trump being stupid as usual. Now they say, oh yeah, we were lying. He's been talking to Flynn the whole time. Even if you wanted to cover up your crimes, why would you be that stupid and admit it? Maybe they realize, oh yeah, when I call Flynn, the FBI knows. I guess I should admit it in public now. Is there no end to this man's idiocy? Okay. But Trump doesn't just hope that Flynn will beat the rap. Several sources close to Flynn and to the administration tell the Daily Beast that Trump has expressed his hopes that a resolution of the FBI's investigation in Flynn's favor might allow Flynn to rejoin the White House in some capacity. A scenario some of Trump's closest advisors in and outside the West Wing have assured him absolutely should not happen. Those sources said Trump didn't believe Flynn should be under investigation in the first place. What? You're going to bring him back into the government? We just found out today that Flynn got paid $530,000 by people associated with the Turkish government and changed his position completely from being against the Turkish government to being in favor of the Turkish government and helped the Turkish government make sure that we did not arm Kurdish fighters that would fight against ISIS. You'd bring that guy back into the White House? Just when you think he can't get any more mental, he does. But wait. There's one other thing here other than stupidity. Mike, I know the things that you know. Don't worry, Mike, don't say anything. I'm gonna look out for you later. Don't worry, Mike, there's jobs in it for you. Don't let the FBI scare you. Mikey, I'll bring you back in. We will bring you back to the White House. Everything's gonna be fine. A White House official says, this one appears to be friendly to Trump. Trump feels really, really, really bad about firing him, and he genuinely thinks if the investigation is over, Flynn can come back. Yeah, Flinny boy, of course, we're going to take you back. We're going to go back to the way we were. We're going to make a lot of money together. Don't talk to the feds. Don't be a rat, Mikey. You know, don't worry, we'll take care of you, Mikey. Mark Zed, a national security attorney, says, the last thing the White House would want is an allegation of conspiracy, witness tampering, or coordination. If Flynn is going to be indicted or certainly under investigation, then I would want the president to be as far away from him as possible. So you got possible charges of conspiracy, witness tampering, and coordination with that said witness. And you're going to risk all that. Why would you do that? There's only two possible answers. He's the world's dumbest man, which is entirely possible. Or he thinks, Mike, don't say anything, don't say anything, don't say anything, don't worry. We'll get you paid afterwards. You know how the Turks paid you off? Now we'll pay you off. We got your back, Mike. Whatever you do, don't say anything to the feds. Is this a good idea? Well, Brad Moss, a law partner, says, talking with witnesses got Nixon in trouble. Hey, what happened with Nixon anyway? Oh, right, he resigned when they were set to impeach him. Just saying. This is really, really bad. Okay, now when we come back, one of the great stories we have for you guys is tough guy Alex Jones said he was going to fight Chobani to the end. He was never going to surrender. What happened instead? You're going to love it. Come right back.